My name is Shredda, and this is The Lightner Side of Things, Practitioner Perspectives in School Psychology, a place for school psychology practitioners to come together and share experiences and insights about their work. So today I'm talking with Alice Lee. Hi, Alice. How are you?
Hi, good, Shredda. How are you?
Good. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Talk a little bit about your training, how many years you've been practicing, and the setting in which you're working.
Okay. Well, I'm Alice, and I am a school psychologist of 1 year. I just finished my first year. I completed my training at the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. So I did my master's program there, as well as the educational specialist program right after that. And I did my internship at a smaller suburban school in Jersey. Pretty diverse. And now I am practicing in a small, also small, but definitely larger from my internship district in South Jersey. So it's been fun so far. I think that I've been learning a lot this past year.
So you mentioned that you're working in a small district.
Mm-hmm. It's about, I'd say, we have about 350 mm-hmm. staff and little less than 2,100 students. So it's relatively small. I mean, we have one middle school, one high school, and I believe it's, I don't work in elementary. So I think we have three elementary, but three elementary. So I'm in typically the middle school and high school as the eighth and ninth grade case manager and school psychologist in the high school.
Nice. So from what I sort of understand about your current setting is that it is a largely homogeneous area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the district isn't very diverse, I would say. I think they've been trying to increase that diversity with the staff that we have, but in the families that I work with, it's pretty homogeneous. And, you know, some of those challenges I feel like are that I'm not tapping much into that diversity aspect of who I am as a school psychologist and working with different families. I feel like a lot of my cases are pretty similar. A lot of my kids are very bright. They are, you know, it's like very similar cases with what the academic struggles may be. But of course, in each case, it's going to be very different, right? And how the disability mm-hmm. shows up. So there are nuances for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. I feel like in every setting in which we work, there's something to be learned and there's always going to be challenges. And I'm wondering in that type of setting, what are the greatest challenges that you encountered really? And also maybe what are some of the things that you've learned from working with such a population?
Mm-hmm. So I guess in my district, we have a lot of families who are very educated. And so some of the challenges may be that as a new psychologist, as someone who looks very young and, you know, green, and some of these parents have multiple degrees in whatever specialty it is, I felt like in the beginning, they looked down on me and they often asked about my credentials and asked a lot of questions that I wasn't prepared to answer. But, you know, I felt that as I got more comfortable and as I started to really talk about their children and their needs and really tap into what I know about these students and how to work with them, they were better able to trust me. And I felt like as the year progressed, as I grew in my own confidence as a practitioner, I don't know, I felt like that went away. It wasn't as horrible as an experience in feeling tested by parents who are super educated. Like there's attorneys and doctors. And so a lot of times I just felt like I was put on the spot. So I've learned that in being in the hot seat a lot of times, like I will have to be extra confident and almost like a fake it till you make it type of thing. But yeah, I mean, I feel like that's been a challenge and an area of growth for me, but also not just being young, like the youngest one on the child study team, but looking very different from everyone else. So I'm Korean American. And mm-hmm. so I think that being minority in a largely homogenous area, it's different. So parents aren't used to seeing that, I guess. And so I've been questioned, not about like my background in that sense, but just my professional experience and working and all of that.
Interesting. I love that you talked about both sides of this, about your perspective as an early career practitioner, mm-hmm. your first year, and you're walking into a situation that's difficult for on their first year as mm-hmm. a school psychologist. But for you, you seems like you face a slightly higher level of scrutiny about your ability to do the job. Mm-hmm. So I love that you talked about, you know, being extra confident and faking it till you make it, because mm-hmm. that's really what you do have to do, I think, in your, you know, first year, first couple of years, until you start to feel more comfortable and, you know, confident that you do have the skills and you are prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if it's like my projection of it, you know, by just being different, but it's pretty obvious, you know? So I guess, yeah, I just feel like in being different in that way, I have to step it up a little bit more. And I'm hoping that I feel more confident and comfortable in the next school year, having experienced a wild first year of, you know, distance learning and all of that. I just hope that I finally find my footing in the next couple of years.
It seems like a natural sort of progression for all school psychologists. Mm-hmm. That's how they feel in their first year. Yeah. And to be honest, years down the line, there's still times where you have to fake it till you make it and just, you know, act more confident than you really may be. But that's, I think, just part of the job sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It's nice you to also hear from people who are, oh, sorry. It's nice to hear from people who have more experience and say that too, because there is this validation and comfort in my experience, you know, where it's like, oh man, I just feel so alone in this. But when other people are talking about it, it's like, all right, well, seems like this is the natural progression of the job and like how it is. And you just kind of have to go through that rite of passage, I guess.
Yeah, I think our field is just, it's so broad and there's so many things, mm-hmm. so many areas to be skilled in, to be knowledgeable about. And it's, you know, it's ever evolving too, that it's just such a constant learning process. And at times you have to just give and take a step back, take a breath, and say, I did the best I could, and this mm-hmm. is what I need to learn. And that what that means in translation and practice is sometimes you go and you really are just, you know, doing more listening than you are talking. You're mm-hmm. Pretending to be a little more confident than you may be in the moment about the topic.
Oh, yeah.
But that's okay. It's also just the nature of our field, and that we are constantly having to learn and keep up with new research, as well as kind of the evolving nature of our society and how, you know, different things are impacting our kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I hope to, I really hope that I grow from all that and start to figure out, you know, how to navigate in my own specialty of, you know, how I'm working with students in this environment, especially. I think there's always something new, and you know, it's never a dull day, never a dull moment.
That's for sure.
Being flexible. the best trait to have as a school psychologist, right?
Absolutely. I think Gumby would be proud.
Mm-hmm.
You touched on what it's like to be a Korean American, mm-hmm. In your current setting or in your practice as a whole. And I know we had this conversation about a week or so ago, talking about what it's like to be a person of color in this field in school psychology.
Yeah. So I kind of stumbled into this field. Like, I think it's important to give some background in that. So I'm going to share about that. So I did a lot of behavioral work prior to entering this field. And, you know, I think this is a nice poignant story to share. My parents, they kind of weren't like super all in about this, but you know, I feel like being in that type of work, doing that type of work in this field, I've opened their minds up a little bit as well. And so, you know, we have this Indian American family as our neighbors, and the child is autistic. And so he actually kicked the ball over the fence, and my parents brought it over. His parents were super like apologetic. They're like, oh, we're so sorry, our child, blah 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 blah. And my dad was the one who went over, and he was like, oh no, you know, it's fine. And that father went into the story of like, our child is autistic, etc., etc., etc. And you know, it stirred up a conversation between them, like, oh, our daughter works with children who are on the spectrum. And it was really cool that, you know, like, me being in this field can kind of open up even my parents' minds, like an older generation. And so I feel like in my practice, like, that's what I want, you know, like, I don't know what kind of families are going to come my way, in whatever setting I may be in. It may be in this setting currently, it may be in a different setting, who knows. Mm-hmm. But, you know, diversity is not something that you can ever have enough training in, I think. And I also think that in different cultures, there's a lot of, you know, that taboo nature of special education, of having a diagnosis, you know, of, you know, just any of those things. And so creating conversation and normalizing it and having that face, especially being a person of color, in a pretty, you know, widely white and feminine female field that it is now. I feel like we're lacking a lot of males in this field, but I feel like that's pretty big, you know, like you can connect with a family when they look like you, or when you look, you know, when they see like, oh, she looks like me. There is this connection, that's this unspoken connection, and hopefully it can break down some barriers in that. And so, you know, how I saw it with even my parents and our neighbors, I felt like, wow, that's really cool. I hope that I can do that and bridge the gap between the families that I work with, and some of the, you know, difficulties that they may have about accepting a certain recommendation or a diagnosis, any of those things. I feel like that says a lot. And I feel like, yes, there's also going to be a lot of challenges that come with that. There are still going to be people who push back and look at me like, as like, who are you to say this, you know? But yeah, I feel like that's in some way of how I would like to influence my practice in this setting or beyond. And to be able to connect with other people who are, you know, other people of color who are in this field. I think that's also really cool and something that's needed, especially in, you know, the climate that we're living in, especially.
I was having this conversation with another school psychologist, mm-hmm. Dwight Hood, And he said, one of the things that he said really stuck with me when we were talking about being a person of color in the field and kind of what needs to change or what can change to increase diversity in the field. And he said something along the lines of, I am the change. I am a person of color in this field, and therefore I represent that change moving forward. So just my presence is the change, is part of the change. That was very powerful.
I didn't think about it that way, but yeah, I guess that would be it. And to own that, and to have to take that and run with it, and not just sit back quietly and let other people do the
Sure. So we also know that school psychologists' roles tend to vary depending on which part of the country or world they're practicing in. And you seem to have more of a unique role that's specific to your location, or your state, kind of the way your state, understands school psychologists and the responsibilities they're given. And that's being on the child study team.
Right. So on the child study team, our child study team, we have two social workers, three school psychologists, and two learning disabilities consult teacher consultants. And so each person, while they have, the roles that I just listed, they're also case managers. And so my case manager role is that, I work with 8th and 9th graders in the district. So all of the classified 8th and 9th graders are managed by me. I work with the families, I work with their teachers, I'm looking at their IEPs and their goals and running meetings and consulting, and I'm the liaison between any of the communication that happens between the family and other personnel who need to be involved. So there's a lot that goes into that. But I feel like it's a love-hate relationship being a case manager, and my coworkers will also say the same. It takes up a lot of our time that sometimes I feel like I'm not able to do the full school psychologist role. But I feel like it helps me though when I am doing the school psychologist thing. If I have a lot of information about how the student is, functioning in their classrooms and what their teachers are saying about them and the parents' feedback and all of that, and knowing all of that background information definitely helps when I'm working with a student one-on-one, whether it's testing or, I mean, I don't get to do much of counseling anymore because I'm stretched so thin from case management. But
Right.
I feel definitely though it has in the few events that I've met with students and actually got to speak with them outside of testing, like they're it's a deeper, richer conversation because I have all that background information and the connection with the family. And there's a greater trust that the family has. And I feel like, as a first year, having to get to know all these families for the first time and not knowing the history, it was a little difficult. But, as I'm transitioning some of my 9th graders into 10th grade, I have families who are coming to me asking me for my two cents on, how they should be approaching the next school year. And it's kind of cool to see that they've actually, like, I have built that trust with them, and that they are, really asking me because I have knowledge and I have worked with their kids, not just because I'm looking at these documents and making sure that everything is in its place. But there's so much to case management that I feel like I could keep going on and on and on about. It's a lot.
It definitely seems like an all-encompassing role. So, in talking about that role, the case management role, and some of the things that you are able to do as a school psychologist. We are currently having more open conversations about race and systemic racism as a society. We're having that national conversation. In what ways do you see your skill set and practice evolving, or do you see it evolving really in your setting as we begin to have these more open conversations?
That's a good question. So at my mid-year evaluation with my director of special education, he gave me some good feedback about just how I've been adjusting and how my, how I've been practicing as a first year practitioner in the district. And he wanted to, encourage me to speak up more at meetings and to share what I know. And so it came from a really good place. But, now with all this, these open conversations about race and systemic racism, it was toward when all of that was occurring back in, I want to say June, May, June, was it? He had emailed me to start conversation about that and wanted to reflect it on how, when he spoke to me about speaking up, he didn't intend on making it like a, oh, because you're Asian and you're quiet, you need to speak up more. It didn't come from that place. He was doing some reading and he reflected on that. And he was like, oh no, I said that to Alice. And that's horrible because he felt that he didn't mean to say it that way. And so he wanted to apologize, to share with me that, if in any way I was offended, he really does sincerely apologize for that. And I felt like, wow, this is a great conversation to have, even though I wasn't offended. I was like, I really appreciate that you took a step back to, reflect on your actions and what you have said to me. But no, I wasn't offended because there was context to it. But if there weren't context, I'm sure I would have been like, that's really inappropriate to say,
Right.
so I feel like, just in that, and having that conversation with my director, that was big. That was a big step. And with that said, I felt that, we could start having these conversations more in our district. So I emailed him back and I was like, hey, I really appreciate it. Can we have a conversation about this? And so we just talked for like 30 minutes. And, I think that that's something that we have to be open to doing and being a little bit more brave about doing in the settings that we're in with the relationships that we have with different people. And coming from, with this skill set that we have, knowing that a lot of times people probably don't know, they just need a little guidance and some correction along the way, but also coming from a place of just being kind. I think that really having a kind approach and to help people understand and for them to really just have an open, honest dialogue that does more than, pointing fingers. Because I felt like from my own experience with my director, like I was not expecting that at all. And I felt like that was a really nice way to do it. And so that was an example, actually. I'm taking that as an example to do that myself in my own setting.
Yeah, that's really amazing, actually, that your director contacted you, recognized, potentially a microaggression that he may have said, and then contacted you to talk about it. And you guys are able to have that conversation. I think that's really, really valuable and important. And it's not often seen because I think a lot of times, people are afraid of being labeled a certain way. And even if they may recognize something as being offensive after the fact, then oftentimes we want to save face and not address it, or kind of just move on and think we're going to do better from now on. So I think that's really important that you guys were able to reflect together. And I wonder if we'll start to see more and more of that within districts and within schools, that kind of awareness and acknowledgement and open discussion.
I mean, I would hope so. I think that this is the time. I mean, it's very important. And maybe it is really delayed in our actions to do that, but it's never too late to start, I think. And with our current climate right now, it would be remiss to not, right? Like, I think we should. And I think that districts, at least in our district, there has been some open forum to talk about it more. And so it is exciting to see that happen. And so I hope that that occurs, in the neighboring districts and nationwide. I think that would be important to make some kind of change, at least, in our next generation of students.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that said, you talked about being very early in your career. But I often feel like early career practitioners are sometimes in the best position to give advice to those just entering the field, because you're so close to that part of your life. So what are the most important things that you think that you've learned in your career so far?
So I go by this mantra, and I went by, I lived by it through grad school, towards the end of grad school, but I still do. And it always gets done. We have so much to do all the time, and a lot of times it's really overwhelming, and you're like, how am I going to do all of this? I have to meet this deadline. I have this meeting. I have, like there's like 5 million things you have on your mind, and at that point you're like, I don't even want to do any of it. But I think, taking a step back from that, knowing that it always does get finished in some way or another, you are able to do it. And it's just taking it a day at a time, knowing that some tasks will have to wait, and it's okay that something has to sit a little longer. And you don't have to know everything. I think that's the biggest thing. I feel like I felt like when I started, I had to know all the answers. But luckily, I have a team of people who know the answers when I don't know it. So, it's good to ask questions, and it's good to just admit to yourself that you don't have to know everything, because I feel like that lifts a burden off of your shoulders, and then you're able to be more productive in your role. And once I was able to do that myself, I felt like 100 times lighter. Still stressed, but knowing that it's not like the pressure is a little, like it's not as much pressure on me, because there are people who are going to help me along the way. And also, like the history of like all of the things I've done, I've never missed a deadline, so like knowing that somehow, some way, it gets done in the end.
Yeah, that's funny, because I have often over the years told myself it'll get done, or it always gets done, don't worry. So I think that's great advice. And I think one of the best things about being a school psychologist is that team aspect. You're always, more often than not, working in a team. And so you're right, you don't have to have all the answers and know everything. And sometimes you're going to come to the table and have that discussion with your team, and you'll walk away with it, knowing more than you did before. And that's totally fine. That's why we have multidisciplinary teams.
Thank God for them, right? I don't know if I could do it
Absolutely.
alone.
No, it's not a job meant to be done alone, I think, I hope.
it's good to have other perspectives too. I think that's what's really great, because you'll look at a situation differently, and consider different ideas as well. And so it's nice to brainstorm together. I like that aspect a lot about just this, having multiple people on the team, knowing that you don't have to make a decision yourself. I think that's important to consider different opinions and perspectives.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to ask you now, as we prepare to begin the new school year while the pandemic continues, what have your thoughts or worries been? What's been on your mind?
Oh, I have a lot. I'll pick one. I just worry about the regression. I think that's the big one, in our students and their academic progress and performances. I already have parents who are really worried. And as this continues, and as hybrid model or virtual model or whatever it is, will our students lose traction in their learning? There's a lot of stuff going on right now, so it's just, I don't know. If it were up to me, it would just be a perfect world and we would all figure it out like yesterday. I don't know. What's really overwhelming for me is that parents are asking me if I have any more information, and I have to tell them, like, listen, I know your anxiety is high, mine is too. And I want to plan just as much as you do, but I don't know any more than you do. So we just need to take this hour by hour. And I think that's like, it's just so hard, because I feel like everyone's like, what are we doing? And no one actually knows what we're doing.
Well, thank you so much for sharing.
Of course. It was fun to talk about, all of the things that we talked about today. I think that hopefully it gives other people some perspective, and what I do, or what we do in Jersey at least. And I look forward to speaking with you again at the end of the school year. Hopefully things aren't as crazy as it were as we think it's going to be.
Thank you so much for listening to The Leitner Side of Things. If you have any feedback or topic ideas, let me know on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @SGERA99. See you at the next episode.